Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast, broadcasting from the oldest grace-based web presence in the universe, and presenting the Christianity Free Gospel. Would you welcome with me again the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Lilborn Williams?
Good evening, Daniel Rouse. How are you today, my friend?
I am doing well, and how are you?
I'm doing well. I hope all of our Gospel Revolutionaries out there are doing good, and all of our brand new listeners are also doing well. I think people are beginning to see that there's a real difference in this gospel. Gospel of grace and gospel of peace, that Jesus really did do something. It is so weird to be where we are in between Christianity and mysticism. Neither one of them accept that Jesus is Lord. Neither one of them, they say it, but they don't, they really don't use the mechanics of what Jesus actually accomplished and acknowledged, like he did away with sin. Now, the mystics believe there's no such thing as sin, but they believe there never was any such thing as sin, all the way back to hoodoo days, whatever those were. But when I listen to them, you might as well come up with terms like hoodoo days or whatchamacallits or thingamajigs, you know, because that's the way it is when I try. And I've tried so hard to try to understand the concept. And like I said, it is out of the scriptures, but it's just not in the scriptures. And that's the problem. So we've got Christianity on one side that's never heard that Jesus finished everything. And then we got the others that say that all Jesus finished was to reveal to us what else already always been. So we feel like we're just kind of stuck out in a desert by ourselves. Now, we've got a lot of people whose lives have been transformed, pastors, just like Daniel sitting right here. Daniel, help me understand. You've been thoroughly exposed to the Christian view, and you've also been thoroughly exposed to the mystic view, all within the confines of family, that you have experienced this. Help me. Tell me what we're doing and why are we doing. Why does this make a difference to you? Why do you espouse to the teachings of the Gospel Revolution and not Christianity and not mysticism?
Well, for me, it comes down to the fact that I believe the scriptures, the law, the Psalms, and the prophets are inspired. I believe they are the story. I believe they are prophetically true. And I believe Christ came to fulfill the scriptures. And what I see in Christianity and what I see in mysticism is that they don't put any effort to validate the scripture. And though Christianity will value the scriptures, they just don't feel like Jesus did enough to fulfill it. And it's going to happen in the future. So for me, that's kind of the baseline. I'm working from that baseline that I believe the scriptures are true. I believe the scriptures are the story. And I don't see Christianity holding to that story, and I don't see mysticism holding to that story.
Gosh, you're stuck right where I am, dude. Yeah. So, yeah, and here's the interesting thing, too, is that here is an area of agreement between mysticism and Christianity, and that they think that the New Testament is scripture. Both of them. In fact, in mysticism, we've had people like Don Keithley state openly in his post on Facebook, I don't even go back there. You just won't catch me going back there, but I'm going to this one time. I found one good verse in the entire Old Testament, that kind of thing. I'm exaggerating, but that's the way this comes across to me sometimes. It's just so out there. is just, and so then he'll quote a verse. But the thing that we've learned is that our place is where Jesus said to go to validate truth. Mm-hmm. We've even got stories in the New Testament about the Bereans that went and searched the scriptures. When they heard Paul's doctrine, they went to the scriptures to validate whether or not these things be true. Mm-hmm. And Christianity thinks they're supposed to validate these things in the New Testament, which gets to be a pretty scrambled mess when you've got people in the New Testament that disagree with each other.
Yeah. And then especially disagreeing even back with this, what we consider the scriptures.
Yes. And the mystics almost ignore, they try their best to ignore the Old Testament. I have asked for just a place, just show me a place where this is taught in the scriptures. Where did a writer in the scriptures teach your doctrine? Not one of them have ever answered that question. Now they've written back, oh, you need to read this book and that book and the other book. And it's like, come on, we are two grown adults here. I've asked you a very direct question. You can ask me any direct questions that you want. I'll do my best to respond. I'm not going to go say, go read a book. Even mine. I mean, goodness gracious, I'll answer your questions because not all the answers are in my book, that's for sure. Some things I wonder about now that's in my book because it's been a few years. I like where we are, Daniel. I know it sounds like I'm complaining, but I actually like where we are. I don't want to be a part of the generation that remains silent on this issue of the scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
The mystics, the Grace Global Seminary in Texas, and Francois' Mirror Bible is pretty much their Bible. I think that they pretty well espouse to that as their doctrinal go-to book. But these guys are all a part of a mission to try to convince people that the scriptures are not valid to go search anything. Jesus just should have never said, go search the scriptures. Now, we know what he was not referring to when he said that, because there wasn't Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. There wasn't any of those. There wasn't Corinthians and Galatians and Ephesians and Colossians and 1st and 2nd Peter and James and none of those. So when Jesus said, search the scriptures, it's very clear what he was talking about. Anytime that the New Testament talks about the scriptures and says, for the scriptures say, it's never referring to each other's letters, though they had read each other's letters. None of them referred to the other one's letters as scriptures. They just didn't do it. I think you've touched on the most powerful point. And I hesitate to say that there's so many powerful points that all interlock. They all affirm and confirm each. You don't have to stop teaching on this and then go teach on that. Because it, as we've said for many years, there's this fractal nature to the gospel. Mm-hmm. And if you preach one part of it, you've really taught it all. It contains the answers for all the other subjects, all contained in one subject. That's been a real amazing journey for me and for you as a pastor. I was a pastor. Don was a pastor. Jackie Bernard was a pastor. Nardo Scabidi was a pastor. Moses, runs our headquarters in Kenya. He was a pastor. Goodness, the list just goes on and on and on of people who, having been in the ministry, learned at least the value of scripture. You know, they knew that there was something. They didn't know what scripture was. I think most people who have concluded that the New Testament is not scripture, a lot of them, not all of them, have listened to my reasoning about it. You know, if anybody disagrees with that, we welcome your disagreement. We want to talk it through. We really, really do. Because that's how people learn. This childish, I'm just going to call it what it is, this childish shake the dust off your feet just because you found it in one of the Gospels. You know, maybe things changed on this side of the cross. maybe you're not supposed to be shaking the dust off of your feet anymore. Just like you don't have to forgive others first before God will forgive you. That also was before the cross. And Jesus did say that you have to forgive others before God will forgive you. And we know that that's no longer the way things are done. So maybe we shouldn't be shaking the dust off of our feet. But it's a convenient thing to say when you're wanting to not deal with people who have questions about what you're teaching. And this whole atmosphere that is within Mirror Bible with Francois and with all these guys, they just don't like to be questioned. They just don't like it. They will stop associating. Goodness, we've had people stop supporting the ministry who supported the ministry for years because we disagree on these points, who have benefited from hearing the gospel from this ministry for many, many years.
I almost want to say that these people are, you know, specifically talking about those in mysticism.
Yes.
They're kind of, I don't know how else to describe it right now, lack of words, but I'm just thinking like lovey-dovey. And when they're lovey-dovey and so much into love, I feel like they get the sense that if they confront a doctrine or confront an issue, that they're not walking in love. Yeah. And I just don't feel like that's true. And I think it's, you know, kind of putting yourself in a box when the gospel revolution, my goodness, the thing that very saved my life was to question, was to yes. confront, was to examine and be a Berean and go to the scriptures mm-hmm. and all of these things, question and judge. You know, we're afraid of that word. Don't judge. But, you know, we are to judge. Mm-hmm. We don't judge people, but we can certainly judge the doctrines and what's saying.
We are supposed to judge teaching. That Paul yeah. taught it clearly in Corinthians. He said, I'm ashamed of you that you don't have the ability to judge what you hear.
Yeah.
We are supposed to judge what we hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're, like you said, I'm happy in the place that we're in because we're learning and yeah. we're exploring. And to feel like we have arrived at a situation where we have all of the answers or we have it all figured out, that would be a real kind of uncomfortable place to be.
I was there before in the Word of Faith movement. And now I see where the Word of Faith movement has gone. Oh, my God. Some of the video clips out there now of some of these dudes. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. You know, the fact of it is, you know, this what they call confrontation and negativity. Well, they would have thrown Paul out. I mean, when Paul went up and said, you know, that he rebuked Peter in front of them all. Yeah. Well, I just don't like that negativity.
So, or what about Jesus? Oh my gosh.
You know, oh, you brought that negative Jesus. Oh, that negative Jesus. You know what? Negativity when he made it's really funny because I was talking to one of their students on the phone and we were talking about, you know, well, that he was saying that Jesus never demonstrated anything but love. And I says, well, what about that cord that he made, that strap that he drove the money changers out of the temple? And he says, there's not one place that says he ever hit them. It's like, well, you know, if somebody makes a whip, it means that they have the potential to use it, you know, and even though it doesn't say, it does say he drove them out. Was it a magic whip? I mean, you know, was it such an unthreatening whip that they just decided to leave? Or so it's just such a strain to try to hold their doctrine together. And I understand why they don't want to be confronted, because their doctrine falls to the ground when it is confronted. And no matter how much Francois notates with his own comments about his own translation, it falls way short of being anything that agrees with the scriptures whatsoever. And that we're concerned about. We are concerned because folks, this world does not need to be sold on an erroneous teaching that the scriptures are not worthy of our investigation. They are not worthy of our trust that in them there is life. Jesus said, you're supposed to find Christ in those. Mm-hmm. He told them, he said, in them you think you have life, but these are they that speak of me.
Yeah.
So the scriptures are all about Jesus, and I'm not willing to give up on the scriptures, because the more and more I read the scriptures, the more and more I see Jesus, and I see that revelation of Christ there. The law was given to reveal Christ. The law wasn't given, as they teach, as a misguided. They literally teach that the law did not come from God. It came from Moses, and that all of the law was not representative. It was just, you just have to forget all of the law.
Mm.
And but the law, every law is a representation of Christ. You can see Christ in every law. So we've got wonderful people who are better at these types and shadows than I am. Boy, we rely on them to look through these things and to help us understand. So we're learning from different people around the planet all the time. It's just it's a beautiful process.
Yeah, one of the things I was thinking about going through this is, early on when I came out of Christianity, I had a lot of conversations with my father, who is a pastor. And I kind of got to the point in some of our discussions where I'm all like, I just live on a different planet than this guy. You know, he's my dad. We're flesh and blood, and love him with all my heart. But as far as our thinking is concerned, we just live on a different planet. I like our new intro. I hope you like the new intro that we have on the podcast, A Whole New World. I just feel like we are just in a total different world. Michael, what would you say to the people who are listening that may be battling this? I feel like we've presented a good idea, a good argument about why the scriptures are important. But what about those who are kind of battling this thought of, what do I do with what is presented? Because the message makes me feel good that mysticism is presenting. It uplifts me and all of that. But how do I get back to that true story? Holding on to that. What would you say to those people who might be listening?
Keep listening. And we encourage you to listen to them. Listen to them. Read the Mirror Bible. And listen to us. Listen to all of the teachers of Grace Global, then listen to us. Now, I'll guarantee you that the other way around is going to be the other way around. You're going to be warned not to take in all this negativity. Scrub the dirt off the bottom of your feet and keep going. They say they're not talking about people, but I don't know what are they doing when they shake the dust off the bottom of their feet? What are they say it's the negativity. So where does Jesus say, shake the negativity off of your feet? You know, mm-hmm. I think Jesus was talking about leave those people out. And that was a message for the time before all men and every man, woman, and child and God and the dust on the feet and everybody became one. Things have changed, folks. And it's so amazing how quickly they turn religious with a verse out of context to be able to justify not talking, not communicating, not debating. Well, we don't debate. Well, debate's not a bad thing, folks. It's a good thing. I remember one time we had somebody who was battling with Mormonism. It's very much like the same situation, and they told me that they were still attracted to the meetings, that they were still there were things about Mormonism that they liked, but they were understanding the gospel. And they virtually asked me the very same question, and my response to them was, keep going to temple, keep going to the tabernacle, don't stop until you can't go anymore. The gospel will stand up to any scrutiny, Daniel. Yes. We are not the defenders of the gospel. We are the teachers and the preachers of the gospel, and we can take it. We don't take it personally because Goodness, I don't consider this to be my message. You don't consider it to be yours. It's the gospel message. This is literally the testimony of God. This is God's testimony.
Yeah. Wow.
And what they are saying when they say God was never angry, that God created Adam perfect, and that the only thing Jesus did was reveal to us that perfection that Adam lost. They are saying, they are literally saying, we do not believe God's testimony.
Mm.
We love our testimony. We don't want God's testimony, because God's testimony goes against our doctrine. It goes against our teaching. So we have to leave it out. So what I would say to those of you that have gotten something out of Mirror Bible, we had a couple during the Canada conference, the Blackstocks out in Oklahoma, who had understood the gospel before. I had not been in contact with these people, I bet, in 20 years. They happened to pop up on our Zoom meeting, and my gosh, I was just blown away. And they said, thank you for, gosh, they thanked me for saving them from the Mirror Bible. They said they'd gotten to a point to where that they were, as they were reading and studying Mirror Bible, they finally got to asking themselves, well, did Jesus accomplish anything at all? Now, that wasn't me teaching them about Mirror Bible. That was two people who went through all the Tulsa schools and all of this stuff. We've still got more Rhema graduates coming in. I'm just blown away with the number of Rhema graduates. It's like we are the refuge for the Rhema graduates that are coming in here. But the Blackstocks said they were very grateful. They were in tears. They were joyful to find out that what Mirror Bible taught was not true, because it was undermining their understanding of the work of the cross. Now, no matter how negative you hear me speak about Mirror Bible, you will not hear me speak negatively about Francois and Lydia Dutoit. I have nothing negative to say about them, because there is nothing negative about them. I do not believe that Francois is trying to deceive people. I don't think Francois is under a demonic possession. I think he took a wrong turn. I think Francois became unresolved about God being angry. And see, when you ask questions, how can a loving God be angry? You put yourself in a predicament. You see, it's none of your business whether or not a loving God was ever angry or not. You want to know how a loving God could be angry? Because he was. He doesn't owe you an explanation as to why he was angry. Now, we're looking for that explanation, but we are looking in the scripture. I see one thing that is, it's just a little glimpse into the possibilities of this. And you know, one of the very first, it's either the first or the second commandment that God gave man, and that was to never make an image after a fish, a dog, a cat, a camel, nothing. But he said, especially, do not carve an image after yourselves. Don't make an image of a man. Don't make another image of yourselves. Now, it's very interesting that what God said, that this making an image of yourself, this is what God said it would do. He said, the moment that you do, you will corrupt yourselves.
Mm.
Now, people at the time that I brought that, and all I did is quote the verse. I wasn't trying to teach anything. And they're saying, oh, you're saying God was corrupted. Well, when, what does the word corrupt mean? If we took Mirror Bible's definition of corrupt, you could honestly see where that God became corrupt based on their definition of the word. Because all the really and truly only the only thing that the word corrupt means is that something is operating outside of what it was designated for. That's a corruption. And God is love. Now, God's a whole lot more than love. You know, sometimes I want to say, damn you, John, for narrowing everybody's view of God to such a monolithic view that it's so singular that there's only one characteristic of God. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's happened is that dear John has, I don't know if he did it or the fact that this is what this doctrine has done with this one verse out of context about love. And just because God is love, you could say Mike Williams is tall, but that's not all I am. You know, You could say Mike Williams is mean, but even if I was mean, it wouldn't be all that I am. There's times I'm kind. I like to think I'm kind all the time, but that's my own opinion. I'll have you to know. But see, the thing that's disturbing about all this, Daniel, is the willingness to completely chuck the entire scriptures into the trash can as unreliable for what they say. That they are inaccurate, that they, and even the prophets, that the prophets prophesied things because they were under the influence of the law and they were blinded by the law. Well, you totally misunderstand what a prophet is. A prophet is not someone who speaks out of his own understanding. A prophet is someone who speaks based on God's understanding. A prophet, if he's a true prophet, is most likely not even going to know what the hell he's talking about. And, you know, the prophets spoke as they were moved by the Holy Ghost. I totally embraced that. And I don't think they got any prophecy wrong. I think all the prophecies were correct. Going back to Daniel, oh my gosh, and reading all of Daniel chapter 9, you want to wake up and realize the multidimensional nature of God, just like grace is many-faceted. God is multifaceted. He is, my goodness, they even call in one verse, they call him the mighty breasted one. And that is feminine, where it is speaking of him in that. So you just can't speak of God and just say God is love and therefore We view him through no other light other than the light of love. Whatever definition we have put on love. And then we have to go with love based on a definition that man has.
You know? Right. When I came to first discover the teaching of the Gospel Revolution, there was a lot of teaching on against Christianity about what they were saying that's not in the Bible. You know, they're adding doctrine in. And now I feel like on the opposite end of the spectrum, we're dealing with Christian mysticism and we're like, no, put it back in the story. You've taken so much out of the story. You know, Christianity has added to the story and mysticism has taken away from the story. And we're just here saying, look at the scriptures.
Let's just look at the story, you know.
Yeah.
Let God have his own testimony. For God's sake, you feel whether you're a Christian or a mystic, you feel like you have a right to your own testimony. Doesn't God have a right to his own testimony? You don't think that there's a place where his testimony got written down? So we totally dismiss what we are taught by Jesus himself is the source of God's testimony. I've changed my mind about a lot of things over the years, Daniel, but I've never changed my mind to believe something about God because I could not accept that God couldn't be the way that I thought he was. So let me just send this out as a cautionary tale. How many times I've talked to people who their reasoning for believing or not believing something, well, if God's like that, I just can't believe in God. Or if God would do that, I would never believe in a God who could, you know, when we all thought that God was, and many people still are, in charge of children dying and things like that, or just tragedy. So I could never believe in a God who, well, you know, the fact of it is that believing in God or accepting, it doesn't make, if God was doing those things, what would our belief or not belief in him change about him being God? You see, we've got to apply some logic and some reason. We've got to have something that gives us a place to go to that is a legitimate source that even Jesus and Paul said we could go to find these answers. And yes, it does bother me that we've got people out there, regardless of how well-intended or offended they are by what God may be outside of their notions, telling people they cannot trust the scriptures. And they would say, oh, Mike Williams says that we tell people they can't trust the scriptures, but you do. You don't use the terms, but when you tell people that the people that Moses got it wrong, when you tell people that the prophets got it wrong, you are teaching people to not trust the scriptures. We're not going to sit idly by and let an entire generation and a following generation think that these things are true. There are going to be recordings that refute what you say, because what you say in Mirror Bible, what you teach in Global Grace Seminary, it's not true. It is not true that when God created Adam and Eve, that was his perfect and final work. If it was, then they would never, please understand. If it had been his perfect and final work, they would have never been subject to being corruptible. And now Paul has taught us very clearly that now this corruption has put on incorruption. You are now incorruptible. We don't want to go back to the garden because we would just go back to being corruptible again, regardless of your definition of sin. And they do a song and dance about what sin is, but you know, you don't have to do a song and dance about what sin is. You don't have to come up with your own. Paul taught that sin, the sin of Adam, was disobedience. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Disobedience. The obedience, and it wasn't the revelation of the first Adam, the faulty revelation compared to the clear revelation of the last Adam. It is the disobedience of the first Adam and the obedience of the last Adam. And these are two different worlds, folks. And the reason that you live in a different world than your father, you don't live in a different world, but he teaches out of an old world.
Yeah.
What you understand as the gospel is lining up with the new world, the incorruptible seed, the righteousness of God in mankind. The whole old structure is gone. There's no structure to the chain of authority. We are one with the authority.
Mm-hmm.
There is no authority above man. There's no, and that's where pastors get this mistaken identity that they're in authority over somebody. Dudes, get over yourself. You are there to serve. You are not there to rule over these people.
I think that's the conclusion that comes from either side of this, from Christianity or mysticism, when you don't realize that there was a change taking place at the cross. With, you know, Christianity, man, I lived it, you know, talking about being under authority, you know, you're under your pastor, you don't make a decision unless you agree with your pastor.
Oh my God, didn't that go crazy? Yeah.
Yeah, get confirmed with your prophet, and then to the point even that you couldn't even bring an accusation against a pastor unless it was done by two or three witnesses, not hearsay, but actual witnesses to the event. And I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing. But that's the conclusion. When you don't come to the conclusion of the scriptures that Christ came to fulfill the priesthood, There is no longer a priesthood. You know, Christ fulfilled that. And there is no mediation. Christ is the fulfillment of that mediation. Mm-hmm. And that's the big thing, is coming to this understanding, both in whatever story you're looking at. That's why we love, we're coming from our perspective, it's completed in Christ, like Christ said it was finished. And it is finished, and therefore, we are living in that new world, that new cosmos. But as long as you're stuck in those old ways of thinking, that old world, you're going to come to these conclusions. And I think that's part of the big problem that I have, at least, with these trains of thoughts, is where it concludes that, you know, one is greater than another.
Yeah. Gosh, and did we go through that with the Derek Prince and those guys? I can't even remember all of their names. Do you remember any of the rest of them that were in the shepherding movement, they called it?
I remember Derek Prince. I don't remember any of the other ones. That's a name I haven't thought of in a long time.
I know. Yeah, it's like a bad memory. That's a problem. But they had what they were called the shepherding movement. So they were teaching from an old world perspective also, that you were like a sheep. You're not sheep anymore, folks. You are one with God. You're not sheep. And that doesn't make them your shepherd. The only shepherd that the human race ever had was Christ. There wasn't multiple shepherds. There was only one shepherd. There was only one pastor of the flock, and that was Christ himself. But now he's, the sheep aren't sheep anymore. Goodness, we are one with God. So many of these authority structures, I think the very basis of our country was founded on this element of freedom in the absence of authority. If you ask people what is the highest authority in this country, most of them would say the president. They'd say, nah, probably Supreme Court. Well, possibly Congress. Wrong. The highest authority in this country is we the people. Oh, no, Mike, it's God. Well, one nation under God. The statement is a little misleading because we're not under God. We are in God.
Yeah.
And but the highest authority in this country is we the people. And from that is where we serve. We are not. And when we hand out these, when we the people hand out these positions, they're positions of service, not positions of authority. I have no authority over me. And here they go. Oh, there's that Mike Williams with his arrogance. You know, nobody can have authority over him. But nobody has authority over you either. I don't have authority over anybody. Just because I have no authority over me doesn't mean I have authority over you. I'm telling you, you're free. You're either free or you're under authority. There's no way you can combine those two words, I am free and under authority. Those are two different worlds. There's one cosmos, and then there's the new cosmos. And in this cosmos, there is no authority. It is service. If you have a position, it's a position of service. It's funny how that kind of gets into our terminology. We say our president is elected for 4 years to serve. You're elected to Congress to serve. You're elected dog catcher to serve. You go into the military to serve. I was talking to one of my friends who's in the Air Force today. And he said, boy, I wish those sergeants and drill sergeants would learn that. And I told him, I said, yes. I said, they're having a mistaken identity. They could train you guys without putting you under their authority. If they realized they were there to serve you all who were being trained, you don't have to be treated like dirt to get a proper and really beneficial training as to how to be a good soldier or to be a good part of the military, whatever. That's old world thinking that you got to yell and scream at people and tell them their dogs and their dog's breakfast. And you're not even a dog, you're a dog's breakfast. And you're not even a dog's breakfast, you're what the dog threw up later, you know? And then you're what the dog came along and ate that dog's breakfast and then threw that up, you're them. That's just a drill sergeant. You know, that's what they do. But we don't have to do that stuff, folks. You don't have to train people like that in the military. It's not necessary. But if you are in a mistaken position of authority, everybody who is in a position of authority, you have a mistaken identity. You have no authority over anyone. You are there to serve. Wake up and smell the coffee.
In America, we're in a time of our election. And just talking about this freedom and being under freedom, the Christian world is rampant right now with prophecies about who is going to be the next president of the United States. And it's just like you're saying, is they're really not free. And I think they're trying to understand, how can I be free yet be under the authority of even God? And I was listening to a prophecy by Pat Robertson, our buddy Pat, and he said this. This is a prophecy. Donald Trump is going to be reelected president. His very next breath was, "And this doesn't mean don't go and vote." Well, what does that mean? You know, it's they're trying to make this. And what a weird place you get to when you're trying to be free, but yet be under authority.
Yeah. Well, if you're voting, you're not under authority. If it's under prophecy, there's no vote that's going to count. Why would he say that? Why would he say, here's what God's going to do, but please remember to vote? What would happen if they didn't? Can God not overcome a vote?
Come on.
Jeez. So they see, when they say these things, they take God himself and make him look like the puniest single cell amoeba that ever lived on planet Earth. You know, God says that, I don't care whether they said Biden or Trump or anybody else is going to be president. Oh, but go vote. It's like, what kind of God are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. On the other spectrum, I was just getting this picture when you're talking about those who are, you know, leaders or whatever in authority, that they're actually servants, you know, that to trying to change that perspective. And I just had this like kind of visualization of Jesus with the disciples the day that he started washing their feet. And I started thinking about that, you know, these Jewish guys who knew who Jesus was, the Christ, understood biblical prophecy, you know, that this guy was coming. Or even to the fact, if they didn't understand that, they looked at Jesus as being authoritative figure in their life, that he was going to be their king. And then one day they're around having dinner and Jesus starts taking off their sandals and starts washing their feet. Wow. What a moment to really understand the new cosmos.
Yeah. He was demonstrating to them a mystery that they could not possibly conceive of. That was about to change. You know, Galatians, the freedom chapter, Galatians chapter 5, after we're told by Paul that we're not bound to the law, after he rebukes Peter face to face and says, who has bewitched you, and going back under the law, and then chapter 5, stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ has made you free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. That's all being under the authority of the law. You're not under that authority of the law. For I testify again to every man that is circumcised that he's a debtor to do the whole law. He's under the authority. If you're under the authority of one law, you're under the authority of all law. Then the freedom from that law has become ineffective to you. You've fallen from grace. So basically what we're trying to tell you is the whole damn world's fallen from grace. So this goes on down, and then in verse 13, he says, for brethren, you have been called unto liberty. That term liberty. Now, the term liberty shows up as different things. Daniel, what is this one here?
This word liberty is eleutheria, and it means freedom.
Just freedom.
Just freedom. Liberty. Yep.
Freedom means freedom. Like Janis Joplin. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Me and Bobby McGee. I tell you what, when Janis Joplin knew more about freedom than the people in our government, we're in a sad state. Janis, bring us back to where we need to be. For brethren, you've been called unto freedom, only not, and the word use is italicized, only not liberty. Now, is that term liberty the very same word? The second one? Because sometimes it'll switch.
Yeah, it's the same one.
Only not liberty for an occasion to the flesh. Well, what is the opposite to an occasion to the flesh? But by love, serve one another. Now, just since we're going all geeky reeky here, what does the word serve mean?
It means to be a slave to voluntarily.
Yeah.
Be in bondage, to do service.
Man. And everybody ought to be slaves, but it should be voluntarily, not. You say, what's the difference between slavery and slavery? Well, the good kind of slavery is when you volunteer to serve. That's a slave. When you're forced to serve, that's not the kind we're talking about. And what are we supposed to do with this liberty? He said, serve one another. Not this grace doesn't come with authority. The authority of the believer. Well, what the hell are you using authority over? Jesus destroyed all authorities. Jesus destroyed the works of the devil. What are you doing fighting with an entity that's been destroyed? We have nothing to exercise authority over. This whole thing, folks, is about being free. And freedom and authority are two different cosmos.
I was just looking here a little bit further, and one of the lexicons says this about the word serve. It says to be self-governing.
Wow.
I like that.
If there's any government over you, it's your own government. You are governing yourself. And that is what we are as a country. We are self-governing. Now, to be self-governing, you cannot have an authority over you. Goodness. And again, as I said on the Tuesday night thing, on my Tuesday night show, we're learning about the Constitution here. Truly, our founding fathers obviously did not do the founding of our country on Christianity, because Christianity doesn't know about this absence of authority, and that Christianity is the imposition of authority over people.
Mm.
That's what they were getting out from under by coming from England to here, was to get out from under the authority of religion, and only to come here and form a religion and start exercising authority over people. So we're hoping to stop the madness.
Just be free. Enjoy the freedom.
Enjoy the freedom. Follow your heart. Enjoy being free. And enjoy service. Just serve. I'm telling you, it's one of the most delightful places you will ever, ever be. You don't have to be defensive about your doctrine. We're not defensive with the guys in mysticism. We disagree with them. We disagree with them completely, and we lay out why we disagree with them. I wish they would lay out why they disagree with us. I really wish they would, so that we could compare and find out what's going on here. But what always happens is that they make these statements that are really outlandish, that are not scriptural, but then they'll come and write a really wonderful thing that sounds like they agree with everything that we say. But once you look behind the curtain, there's all of these doctrines that are there because they know this isn't going to sell. They know it's just not going to sell. It's going to sell to the ones who go to the school, who get indoctrinated, but it's not going to sell to the masses because it's just, it's not there. People are going to say, where is this taught in the Bible? Well, we get the teaching out of the Bible. Yeah, and so did Jim Jones. So did the Baptists. So did the Catholics get their teachings out of the Bible. The one thing that I am very pleased about with the Gospel Revolution is that we just teach the Bible. We just read in context. We're just doggedly after the context because we trust that the scriptures hold something. And we hold every writer. We hold every writer, including Paul, to the task of being correct based on what the scriptures say. Even Paul, you're not called to have to believe anything that is written in the New Testament unless it can be validated in the scriptures. And what the mystics are doing is taking away the only real validation we have for New Testament writers. The only way to critique the writers of the New Testament, all of the writers of the New Testament, is through the scriptures. You say, well, you pick and choose what you believe about the New Testament. No, we let the scriptures pick and choose what we should accept about the New Testament. We have no authority to pick and choose anything, but we do think that the scriptures were given by God. Moses gave the law. The law came through Moses. I think it's always so interesting that they pull that verse out of John chapter 1, verse 17. The law came by Moses. And they said, see there, see there, see there, and then, see there. I'm saying what I hear in my head. It came by Moses, didn't come by God. But the word by is dia, and the word dia means through. It came through Moses. So the very verse that they used to pull out of context proves them wrong once again, once again, once again. And even where I thought they might have at least one toehold in on this issue was the verses in Hebrews that said that this was finished from the foundation of the world. And Jesus said that it was finished at the cross. And I thought, wow, that's pretty affirming to their cause. And then I looked it up, of course, and the Greek words don't mean the same thing. One means the start and one means the finish. What Jesus said means finish, and what it says from the foundation of the world means that's where it started. One started it, one finished it. It's just so clear from every aspect that I've looked at this, Mirror Bible is incorrect. Now, its conclusions about certain subjects like righteousness and being one with God, those conclusions are correct. But you know, they still haven't resolved the issue of sin. They've not resolved the issue of the second coming. It's still very Christian, mystical Christian. So it is Christian mysticism. See, this isn't just mysticism. This is Christian mysticism. So Christian mysticism has never been able to resolve the fulfillment of all things. We teach, the scriptures teach, that Christ fulfilled all things. Mysticism does not teach that. Christianity does not teach that. They get as far as the understanding of righteousness and all of us being one together, except those that they've just got to reject the negativity and walk on. If you take all disagreement with you as negativity, you wouldn't believe the places I've heard that from. Oh, that's just negativity. You know who I've heard say that more than anything? People in denial. And they don't want their denial to be shaken. And I've heard, and I'm telling you, I've heard it in other contexts outside of a biblical or scriptural context. It's just, oh, well, that negativity, you know, it's in every place that I've heard it, every time I've ever heard it, it has always been that people just don't want to hear an opinion that's going to take them out of their denial.
I remember one time I had a minister in my church, and he was praying. We had a prayer line and he was praying for this lady. As a very Rhema thing to do, he told her to run up the stairs because she had problems with her legs. And she kind of trotted up the stairs, you know, real cautiously. And he brought her back down and he says, all right, let's do it like a faith person would do it. Come on, run up those stairs. And so she did it with a little bit more and she got to the top of the stairs and he asked her, he says, well, how do you feeling? And she's all like, well, that kind of hurt. And he says, how dare you? How dare you? We're people of faith.
No.
You lying. You liar. Don't lie. Speak faith. And, you know, got her to speak faith. You know, I think she just did it just to shut him up and get back to her seat. And it's just like you were saying, you know, just the denial of the fact that it didn't work.
He wasn't going to hear that negativity, was he?
No. Oh, Michael, I am so happy to be free from all of that. Thank God.
Woo!
Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last.
Free at last, free at last. Well, Daniel, I'm grateful. I'm equally grateful for the very same freedom. This is not a freedom I came up with. This is a freedom that was there waiting on all of us. I'm just very grateful to be any part of sharing this gospel. It has really broken my heart when I've seen people embrace this mirror Bible version of the gospel, which I have to say it out loud, it is no gospel whatsoever, because Jesus didn't accomplish a thing except to reveal. And Jesus was way more than a revealer. Jesus was the author and finisher of faith.
And now that we're free, we want everyone to know we want your money. It's Pledge Drive.
Goodness, it is Pledge Drive, isn't it? Yeah, we got it started late, so we're running it into November. Guys, you've been generous. We're asking you to be even more so. And continue, don't stop. Let's make this a successful Pledge Drive. COVID has hit us with certain ones who have supported us in the past because it's hit people pretty hard. So we're just asking you to help us to whatever degree that you can. And we appreciate what you're doing. Jeff Robertson is still dialing his little fingers off. And Jeff also has a full-time job, so if you dial him back, he has other things to do other than a Pledge Drive. But you guys keep trying. Or you can call my phone, 832-318-9339. You can call my phone for any reason. There's times I get calls from people from different parts of the world, and they say, who is this? And I say, well, did you call Mike Williams? Well, yes. Well, it's really you? And it's like, yeah, that's kind of why we put my phone number on there. It's really me. So if you have a contribution and if Jeff happens to be busy, you can call me and you can call Daniel. You can call Don. We're all available for you.
And if you'd rather just go online and make the donation, you can go to gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate button. And there's instructions on there, whether you want to mail in a check or if you'd like to give on PayPal. Those options are all available.
They are indeed.
And so it is. We must leave you, family and friends. If you'd like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. You can find us on your favorite social media network, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Please be sure to hit that subscribe, share, and like button on whatever platform you are listening. Now, it's good night from Daniel Rouse in the frozen tundra.
And it is good night from Michael Williams. And Daniel's in the frozen tundra even in the summertime. You have to understand that. He'll explain that to you someday, I'm sure. But we're coming to you from the southeast here in East Tennessee. It's been a beautiful fall. I've been waiting on color for 2 years, and this year we got it. It's glorious. The trees are on fire. So it's beautiful. Thank you guys for listening. We truly want your feedback to what we've been teaching you today, teaching that we are pointing out to you that we are absolutely convinced that the scriptures teach is a completely wrong view of what is called the gospel by a lot of really sweet people, very, very kind people, very happy people, but that doesn't make it right.
We sure hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, and next week we hope Don will be back with us so that we can do the same thing all over again next week, only...
Well, if Don's here, it'll be better.
Deconstructing religion and barbecuing the sacred cows of Christianity before your very eyes, you are listening to...
Gospel Revolution.
Time coming, coming, seeming like we all been running, running, feeling like the Wild West gunning, gunning. Listen to our elders shunning, shunning, flipping on the news beat, talking, talking, all about the problems, shocking, shocking. We put on our headphones, walking, walking, we put on our headphones. Where do we all go? Love, love, love. Faces, color, color. All the other races, other, other. Why can't you just be my brother, brother? We don't have to kill one another, kill one another. All around the world, we are one, we are one. All around the world, we are one. So where did we all go? Love, love, love.
Be enough, love. Will it be enough?